Hello, good evening and welcome to this week's More Liver Podcast, the only rugby podcast that gives you all the news, views and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter, we are at More Liver Podcast. We are More Liver Rugby Podcast on Facebook. You can find all of our podcasts and content on Anchor and Apple Podcasts and lots of other good podcatchers. We are the West Country podcast that gives a slightly different view on the weekend's rugby action, although there hasn't been any for a little while. From the More Liver Podcast Corporation that also brought you Punching Chats, the Long Leg Cricket Podcast, and other podcasts that you might find interesting. I'm Russ. I'm a really poor host, and I will get you through this as best I can. I'm also joined by the housewife's favourite, who seems to be sat in a cattle shed, according to my picture. How you doing? Phil Elkins. Phil Farm Vet, no longer a farm vet.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, I'm doing very well, thank you, Russ. You've been working on your intros. That was very smooth. New words. New words, new attitude, new Russ.
A new attitude. Aha. let's start a new season as we mean to go on. Because it is a new season, right? That's why we're back. We've had loads of months off. And it's August, and let's get back to playing some rugby. I'm also joined by arguably the nicest and most diplomatic man in Cornish rugby podcasting, Ben Eustace, who everybody loves, especially Matt, Sarri's fan at Shanghai or Shanghai.
It's possible I'm the only man in Cornish rugby podcasting, so I don't know if that's a big achievement or not.
But you are. So, yeah. have you had a nice break post punching chat? It's good. Got to be a good few weeks since we last did a punching chat.
Yeah, well, punching chat went the same way as sort of Zoom quizzes, didn't it? As soon as everyone got out to get out of the house, they stopped doing it. So went to the pub on day one and then haven't been back since. So,
yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. That's it. Too busy, isn't it? Cornwall is. Twice as busy as normal, isn't it? It's crazy.
That's because there are people that are still on furlough. There are people that are coming here on holiday because they're not going abroad. And there's also the people that live here that aren't going abroad. And the whole place is basically a hotbed for
people from abroad that are coming here trying to live.
Yeah.
Well, somebody got forcibly ejected from Tesco and Weybridge at the weekend because they refused to wear a mask and refused to queue because they've come down to Cornwall to get away from all this coronavirus.
I've heard that more than once.
They refused to queue
to come into the shop, and they refused to wear a mask because they came down to Cornwall to get away from all this coronavirus nonsense. So they got chucked out and probably went to Audi across the road.
Amazing. Well, Audi's technically German, isn't it? I don't know whether they have to wear masks over there. and finally, you may have heard a dulcet tone here or there. Our very own Chinese lensman, our sports videographer, who's already been in several bubbles since the end of lockdown, who appears to be changing his backgrounds on Skype to Alan Partridge and characters within Alan Partridge, which has just made me laugh. Welcome back out of the bubble, Doug. You were at the Aegeus Bowl for the ODIs, weren't you? You were in a biosecure bubble.
Quite literally in a bubble.
Playing golf with ahead of England cricketers and stuff.
Yeah. You know, just hanging with people. My people
hanging, you're just appearing at levels.
Quite nice to go and do a bit of work, but also at the same time I quite like not working.
don't we all yeah. Are you missing the landscaping?
Yes.
If you hear people spontaneously bursting into laughter without any reason, it's because somebody has changed their background. Now we've discovered apparently on Skype that you can change your backgrounds, and every now and again somebody will change their background and it will
it'll yeah. Let's talk about some rugby. We are restarting the season. It's not a new season. You could be forgiven for thinking it's a new season, judging by the Sale lineup for Friday night away at Quinn's. Doug, you are working. You're sort of heavily involved in liaising with clubs, I guess, for camera operators and stuff like that. What are the bubbles and what are the protocols looking like within the grounds? Is there something that's, you know, is it standard across the board like the cricket is, or how is that working with regards to the logistical restart of the rugby?
So I'm not really sure how much I'm allowed to say, but yeah, there are measures in place to keep us plebs away from the importance.
Away from the talent.
Yeah, regarding sort of safe zones and where we can and can't go during certain times. So we'll all be temperature checked when we get to the grounds. We'll all have to wear face coverings. We have to work in sort of small groups. So all that kind of stuff. We're not allowed to share lifts together. We're not allowed to. So obviously, you know, if you're doing a Sale to Exeter, for example, usually you'd have four in a car, you'd all pile in, but that's sort of gone out the window. We've all got to drive individually. We don't get on-site catering anymore for the duration of this. So we've all got to pack our own...
Sangers. Get your Sangers out.
Yeah, which is interesting when you're days away and you're staying in a hotel. How are you supposed to do that? But we'll figure it out. We're all big boys, and we're no longer allowed to sort of disappear off and have a nice cup of coffee in a cafe with the boys. We've now got to sort of put our camera in, then go and sit in the car till we're required, basically.
So other than taking your own car, presumably they're not stipulating what you do in between matches. So if you're doing a Sunday match, then a Friday match, they're not controlling what you're doing Monday to Thursday.
No. No, not at all. Not at all.
So effectively, they've just got to assume that... I'm just ignoring it. effectively, they've just got to assume that you're infected as far as the players are concerned, or you're a risk, and keep you completely, as far as you can, away from playing staff, support staff, etc.
Yeah, yeah. So effectively, you have a red zone in the ground, which is like the highest sort of clearance in terms of controlling who goes in and out. It's potentially just going to be so obviously we've got a cameraman that runs up and down the side of the pitch. They'll be the only person that can sort of access the red zone, and they'll be open to more stringent sort of controls, testing and likewise. So I'm not even sure I should have said that, but whatever. Yeah, there's a lot of measures in place to keep everyone safe.
I guess some players must be more at risk than others, mustn't they? I mean, if you pass it on to Marlon Yard, it'd be the first thing he's caught in about three seasons.
Oh, there it is. Bending a banter.
I think... You know, the Premiership have had several months, well, a couple of months now to observe how football have done it. Cricket's come back. So they've obviously, I assume they've been liaising with those other sports. Cricket is very tight. Constant testing of everyone who goes in the ground, basically. And I worked on the ODIs with Ireland. We were tested a week before we went. We were temperature checked probably a dozen times a day. We weren't allowed to leave they call it the biosphere of the Aegeus Bowl. So I don't know if you've ever been to the Aegeus, have you?
No.
Okay, well, so there's a road into the Aegeus. It's one road in, one road out, basically. There's a Holiday Inn Express, a David Lloyd, and a Hilton attached to the hotel, attached to the ground, and then a golf course. We were only allowed within the grounds of the Hilton. David Lloyd and the golf course, and we all had GPS Bluetooth trackers on us. So if anyone was in the wrong place, or if some, you know, they could contact trace us, basically, you could see exactly where you've been, who you've been with. So they were very stringent.
Sounds like a maximum security prison for people who, for kind of white collar criminals.
Yeah, absolutely.
Play your round of golf, play a bit of tennis, but you're not allowed out to see the public.
Yeah, yeah.
Like an open
prison. You've got to
consider,
though, that, you know, football went the whole of their restart from beginning to end. I'm pretty sure I didn't hear of anyone who caught the virus during that whole period. And the same with the cricket. And then we hear about rugby league, and they've had loads of guys test positive. So
the trouble is, obviously,
And there's plenty of rugby union players have tested positive so far already, isn't there?
And there will be, but what you'll find is if they follow the same sort of principles that the football and the cricket have done, that because they're isolated, they remain completely clean, so they don't interact with anyone outside of their team or the opposition. Some of the things around the football, though, you know, that you've probably seen, you know, sub sitting 2 meters apart with a face mask on for 70 minutes, come on the field, take the face mask off, high five the bloke coming off, and then immediately go, you know, jostle at a corner. It's like, it's
for show.
Without wanting to say it's for show, I think it's...
I can say it.
Yeah, I mean, like, the dressing rooms, everyone in the dressing rooms 2 metres apart, so they'll go and play rugby for 80 minutes, and then they'll, you know... Obviously, every precaution has been taken, and I'm sure they're doing the best job that they can do. And I, for one, hope that it's a success, because I've worked as a landscaper and I earn a lot less doing that.
And worked a lot harder.
Yeah. Yeah.
So excluding your income, though, I'm finding it hard to get excited too much about finishing off a season that's tarnished already with the whole Saracens thing.
Well, let's get into that then, because that's an interesting point, Phil. You know, we're getting back into Premiership rugby, which is already sort of three quarters of the way through. I mean, I'm just looking to see how many games there are left now.
Nine games left.
So we've got nine games left in the Premiership. The Saracens are already relegated, so the likes of Leicester, Worcester, probably Gloucester, but, you know, a good run from Gloucester upwards could see them getting a playoff spot potentially. Saracens, how there's questions around Saracens and how many games they're just going to mail in. There's questions around another club that might be affected by some salary cap sanctions potentially, but that probably wouldn't be there until next season. There's all these player moves, so it feels like a new season, but it isn't. Now, how can you have a result at the end of a season where all these players are, you know, you've almost got teams that are unrecognizable, Ben, from the teams that they started with?
Well, I'll tell you what it feels like to me. It's like what before a football season, you get two or three Premiership clubs go on a tour to Thailand and play Bayern Munich and two local sides, and that's almost what it feels like. It's like almost like a pre-season thing, because, like you say, the squads are pretty different. You know, there was a few Sale fans saying, well, you know, we're probably the second best team in the league because we're on such a good run of form. Well, no one's on a good run of form because they haven't played for nearly 6 months. So short of, I think, Exeter being the best side and the fact that Saracens are relegated, I think it's just going to be a bit of a lottery, and then four teams will go through to the playoffs. And I don't want to take money out of Doug's pocket, and I know that there's, you know, contracts with BT and contracts with players' bonuses and stuff, but as a fan, I feel I would have rather they'd just gone straight to the playoffs with the top four that were in place at the time.
And then start the next season in September.
And my sort of thinking is, in some way, start the new season earlier to get it all done, to give the Lions a bit more of a run up, because again, the Lions is going to be compromised by the Premiership final being after they all get together.
Yeah, but people don't care about the Lions, do they?
That's my biggest concern. And Ben, as a rugby fan, not someone that works in rugby, I completely agree with you. I just think the demands that they're now placing on the players, basically going to be playing straight through for 2 years.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's right. And it ultimately does come down to dollar bills. But I just think there's something just a little bit not quite, doesn't sit quite right with me that, you know, we're in August and the new season would have started in 4 weeks.
Yeah.
So let's chill out and start the new season.
Sorry, go ahead, Ben.
Just this whole player safety has been pushed by the authorities. It's been pushed all the time. Well, the golden opportunity they've got now is to give a generation of players a very light year. Last March until the Lions tour, they could go, okay, right, we'll have a diet season, short season, make sure the Lions is good.
Let's be honest, I think the Lions tour is probably 30-70 terms of it happening. I just cannot see that. Unless something dramatically changes. I mean, I'm just flicking, I've got the BBC website up. There's stories all over the place. Hundreds of cases here and all this kind of stuff, and I just can't see how that tour is going to happen. So I wouldn't be too.
And if you look at the timings,
concerned about that.
If you look at the timings for South Africa and where they are in the outbreak, they're where we were in May time.
Mm. Yeah, but we're not going to know.
We're not
in 2 months. Are we?
We're not
with regards to.
If you take someone like Manu Tuilagi, who we know is severely injury prone, Sale are going to be paying him a reasonable drop of money. I don't know what it is, but he wouldn't have gone there for cheap. They're going to want to get their money's worth for him, and they're going to play him for as much as they can, really. You've got 9 games in the next 6 weeks, then a short break, then straight into a full season. I'd be amazed if he's playing in next year's Six Nations if it happens. I'd be absolutely amazed if he hasn't ripped some part of his body off another part of his body.
Yeah, it's, well, Tuilagi is one of the biggest sort of talking points of this off season, as it were, because, you know, leaving Leicester and signing for Sale has put them in a very sort of strong position. I mean, you just got to look at their lineup for the game against Quins tomorrow to see, you know, imagine if they didn't have every single South African, Manu, Du Tuilagi, Robert Duperreira, Faf de Klerk, all of these D's and do's and don'ts. How can we still be calling it the same season other than the points and the table when the league looks so much so different? I really struggle to get my head around it, which is making me feel a little bit apathetic about, as much as I'm enjoying looking forward to watching games of rugby, the actual overall overriding result, you know, I'm really struggling to care about it. And that's as a rugby fan, as a Premiership fan. And then it's almost as if they want to get this over as soon as possible, get next season out of the way, and Premiership Rugby can have Saracens back into the 13 team league 2 seasons time when everything may or may not be back to normal, and they can have their little ring fence league.
I just think hypotheticals
don't serve to sort of clear this situation up. There's nothing to say that 13 team league is going to happen. I wouldn't bet on the Premiership actually sorting out anything to do with ring fencing for as long as they can't ring fence while they haven't got fans, because the longer this goes on, and if it stretches into next season, we're going to lose clubs.
Yeah, it is going to stretch into next season.
Yeah, it's got to. Yeah, I just think this season's been a weird season before COVID happened, because it started late. You know, the players coming back and forth from the World Cup, then you lost the best team in the league, so it became a bit of a procession. They turned up some weeks and didn't, you know, Saracens turned up some weeks and didn't other weeks. And it never really got going. You'd have a week of Premiership, 2 weeks of Europe, and then 2 weeks of Premiership and a couple of the Mickey Mouse Cup and then the Six Nations. And it just never got really any momentum behind it as a competition. And I don't think it will now. So the sooner they can get it done and Exeter win it, because they're going to, then the better.
But that's the thing. It's less likely that they're going to win it now than it was before. Pre-lockdown and stuff, with the season the way it was, I would have thought it would be entirely theirs to lose. But the way teams are shaping up now, Bristol with Rodrada and Sinclair and all of the riches they've got, and Sale with their unlimited pipeline straight from Johannesburg, it's absolutely less of a foregone conclusion. It's in fact, I wouldn't even have Exeter as favourites. There you go.
Wow.
I think you have to
have Exeter. Bearing in mind, as many of those players in the Sale team haven't played together in a team in a competitive match ever. I think you've got to have Exeter as favourites, but I kind of agree that it's probably not as clear-cut as you would have called it in March.
I think the football showed that the first couple of games are going to probably be quite unpredictable. Yeah. No one's played together for a long time. You've got no crowds, which seem to affect some teams more than others. And I think there'll be a few weird results in the first couple of weeks, but I think it'll probably even itself out once everyone gets used to the atmosphere and everyone gets used to playing again. The better teams will rise to the top again.
I suppose the interesting thing is, if you look at the football table post lockdown, the best are near the top and the worst are near the bottom, but there are some kind of near the middle that have made massive differences.
Mm.
So if you look at Southampton got the third highest amount of points after the lockdown, having been crap before that. So you might see Wasps or Quins or whoever coming out, go on a massive run. But I can't see Exeter turning to a pile of rubbish, and I can't see Leicester becoming excellent.
But that's what I'm not saying, that Exeter are going to turn to a pile of rubbish, and they've got good acquisitions. But the point is that Sale and Bristol look far stronger outfits than they were previously, which makes those one-off games. Those three will be in the top four, and whether it's Northampton, Gloucester, Bath, whoever it is in that fourth place, those semi-finals, it would have made more sense, like Ben said right at the very start of this, get those four teams doing the semi-finals, get those played, and then start the season in September and crack on from there.
Yeah.
I suppose the thing in Exeter's favour is the bulk of that squad's been together for a lot of years.
Yeah, and I was going to say,
a lot of new additions.
I was going to say, look at the signings that you're talking about. Bristol, they've signed a winger and a prop, right?
And Ben Earl and Malins.
Well, Ben Earl, who are you going to leave out? Are you leaving out Nathan Hughes then?
Well, I think he'll probably play at seven, won't he? Luatour at six and Hughes at eight.
I don't think signing Manu Tuilagi suddenly turns Sale into world beaters.
I think if you... Sam Hill is a very,
any
very
than,
good...
Any more than Northampton signing is equal. Like, no one's talking about that signing.
No, they're not. True.
So... It could be that having two centres the size of Tuilagi and Van Rensburg just doesn't work. It could be that shoehorning Nathan Hughes into seven or Ben Earl into seven to accommodate the other doesn't work.
There would be a list as long as your arm of quality players who haven't made it,
And look
impact.
At you say about
for every Kobus Reinach and Louis Picamole, there's a Nemanja Nandolo when he played at Exeter and was absolutely pony.
And you look at Max Malins at Bristol, so they're gonna not pick
Sheedy.
Well, Malins is a fullback for Saracens, so they're just not gonna pick the Kiwi fella.
Piatow. Well, they only play.
I think they've got Malins in to play 10, haven't they?
Yeah, because they've got.
He's not going to keep Callum Sheedy out of the side.
No, but between him and Madigan, they're going to be the sort of the 1-2 punch, a bit like Stevenson. That's what I mean. It was Sheedy and Madigan, wasn't it, to a certain extent? But what I was saying is like Stevenson and Simmons at Exeter or.
My words, Malins will not beat Sheedy out for that role.
No, he won't, no.
Sheedy's the heartbeat of that side. I've seen Bristol a lot at the start of this season.
some year.
Yeah, and he was, he's the man in that team. You know, everyone, the whole thing orbits Callum Sheedy, which is a weird thing to say, but...
Ashton Gate orbits around Callum Sheedy.
Yeah, and like I say, Ben Earl could play seven. I can't think off the top of my head who Bristol's sevens are at the moment.
It's been that blonde lad Thomas, isn't it?
Dan
played
Thomas.
Really well.
It's more.
We just don't know, do we? That's it. We're guessing at everything. We're guessing. There's three or four teams with new coaches, new directors of rugby, so we don't know what they're going to do. You know, Gloucester changed, Worcester changed, Bath bought Hatley.
I'll tell you what, you mentioned Gloucester there, just to take a look. That was a whole very random set of circumstances, wasn't it? With old Mr. Ackerman departing for Japan. It was almost like, he got... He was involved with David Humphrey's wife or something at some point, and before you know, he was on the next plane out to Tokyo. Not an actual fact, by the way.
Just the three post bags full of yen probably helped.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I just think it's very hard to predict. Like we said, some teams will maybe come out firing, but they're not all going to. Sale, that team they've picked today. I mean, that's. It doesn't look the subtlest of teams, put it that way. I think that's only going to play one way. Marcus Smith's going to have fun, isn't he? Going to be doing a lot of tackling. Yeah. But I just think, I don't know, are that many people excited about it? I don't, I'm not sure they are really. Like you say, it'd be
I'll
nice.
I tell you, we will be excited about it. People who like telling other people they're wrong on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a lot of that going around at the moment, isn't there?
We've managed to... It's been, nearly 5 months since there's been any game of rugby, and yet I think someone has been disagreeing about something vaguely related to rugby every single day on Twitter.
I've posted a picture of Phil because his background was so superb with the vest... Cowshed combo is too good not to put on Twitter, but I've barely been on it throughout the whole lockdown. It's been wonderful.
It really is an absolute cesspit of hatred. The thing that the and we've been round this boy many, many times, but the thing I hate the most is that you're unable to disagree with someone on the whole. It does happen very rarely. Where you disagree with somebody and then you're able to have an amicable discussion about why you disagree and approach things from another point of view without being called a dickhead or without someone going, well, your opinion doesn't matter because you don't think this or, you know, I just like, why does everything have to be so black and white? It really isn't.
I don't know, mate. But why don't you send a DM to Exeter for Change or Chiefs for Change or whatever they're called? find out what they think.
I had somebody yesterday tell me that nobody has an issue with the name Exeter Chiefs. It was just the use of the mascot. And I was like, well, that's funny, because I've had an argument with Chiefs for Change about the fact that they want the name changed.
But it's
just people.
I was under the impression they didn't want the name changed, but.
Well, and that's the point, is they can't make their bloody mind up how far they want to virtue signal.
Well, that's the point.
I nearly got into it with somebody about the fact that, you know, I said that, you know, the Premiership rugby can't get out of its own way with the Exeter Chiefs thing. Literally generations of Navajo Indians are now not watching the Premiership because of Exeter's name. You know, and it was like I'd shat on a baby.
Again.
Honestly, I could have literally shit in a baby's mouth and got less abuse.
The irony is, if that whole situation, I didn't really want to get down this rabbit hole, but whilst we're here, is that, you know, all of the people that feel outraged on behalf of somebody else, so all this faux outrage, oh, well, somebody somewhere must be offended, therefore I'm offended. And then they've trawled the internet and found a tribe somewhere who happened to be offended by the appropriation of the Exeter Chiefs using the name and the branding and all that and all the stuff that they use. Now, there'll be hundreds of other tribes across America that couldn't give less of a shit about that, but they found one that's offended. So because this one is offended, that means they've got to change. Or that everybody thinks they should change. But that's like,
you know, it's not only that. It's the fact that you can't.
There's no reasoning with these people.
If you're not if you're not bowled over with offence, then you're complicit.
Yeah,
I genuinely just don't care. They could be called the Exeter Labia for all I care. You know what I mean?
there's this week's podcast title.
I just don't care. And if that makes me complicit and that makes me a racist, so be it.
Yeah, but it's not, though, because just because, and I had this with certain other people that were mutually friends with Doug, just because you're not outspoken in your opposition to something doesn't mean that you agree with it. And people telling other people that they have to stand up and they have to do whatever it is they've got to do. They've got to support it. They've got to tattoo whatever it is they're supporting on their forehead to show that they're a proper supporter. It's not the case. Oh, doing nothing is doing nothing's just as bad as supporting racism or whatever, or whatever it might be. But it's not the point. It's not the point, is it?
Also, fine. If that's what you want to think of me, then fine.
Yeah.
If you think that of me, then you don't know me, and B, I don't really care what you think.
So this leads.
Do you know what my take on it is that? So somebody wrote to the Chiefs and said, "Look, we've got an issue with your cultural appropriation of Native American Indians." So, and they went, okay, let's have a look into it. We've had a look into it. We've spoken to various Native American Indian tribes. They've kind of said that the whole mascot and the labelling of the bars, et cetera, they find offensive. So we're going to stop doing that. But actually, they haven't got an issue with the name, and we think the name is part of what we're doing. They weren't offended by the fact that we're trying to portray them in a positive light, but they just didn't think it was good taste. So this is what we've decided to do. And at that point, everybody should go, oh yeah, you know, good on you for investigating it and taking a stance. Deal done, finished. It's the fact that you can't go, we've looked into this, we've probably cocked up a little bit, so we're going to change things, and people still go, but you're not changing enough. It's
primarily Saracens fans. I seem to have noticed.
Yeah, you can never change it. And Saracens, how about those Muslims?
Yeah. How about those
there's a can of worms.
Well, let's not all jump aboard a bandwagon, Saracens fans.
Let's be honest, like the Crusaders isn't great either, is it?
Oh, absolutely isn't.
Yeah.
No, of course it's not.
Isn't that akin to being like the Northampton Nazis?
Yeah, the Gloucester Gestapo, yeah.
And I tell you what, wasps serve no positive function in the world. They're just little cunts. So,
I mean, I'm a big fan of Northampton Nazis and the Gloucester Gestapo.
The Bristol Bath Party.
Not in their ideals, obviously.
Well, that's the greatest. I'm watching Once Upon a Time in Iraq at the moment, and they just could be called the Bath Party, couldn't they?
Yeah.
And have a little like caricature of Saddam as their logo.
Oh, Ben, sorry, you were in the middle of something there.
I was just going to say, I don't think anyone really in their right mind has an issue with Chiefs, because that doesn't just.
Yeah, but why can't they be Celtic Chiefs?
Well, to be honest, that would make more sense. I've never quite understood the sort of Native American branding anyway. And the mascot, I think they're better off without that. And I've always found the tomahawk chop incredibly irritating. So I'd be glad to see the back of that.
Couldn't agree more. People wearing face paint and those headdresses, they need to be shot on sight anyway.
Yeah, as I said to Doug, if you got stuck behind the 6'3" man,
all you're doing there, Russ, is doing exactly what the people who are protesting the logo are doing, just in a different way. If a bloke wants to go to a rugby match with 15 dildos stapled to his forehead, fine. Let him go to the rugby match with 15 dildos stapled to his forehead.
As long as it doesn't block your view.
He might be a bell end, but it's his choice to be a bell end.
If I want to go and see the Venice Viet Cong, I can dress as I want.
But Russ, saying that is equally as bad.
Fair enough.
I did wonder if I think I said to maybe Russ that if there was some team in Alabama that was called the sort of Alabama Cornishmen, and they had a mascot which had sort of six fingers on each hand and was married to its own sister, I don't know if I'd be too keen on that going ahead. So
because a native Indian chief wearing a headdress is probably the same as an ancestral six-fingered Cornishman, isn't it?
Well,
I think that's probably stereotypical
icon.
Yeah, but you know, the leader, you know, if you met the leader of Mebby and Kerno, he does have six fingers and is married to a sister.
Chucking pasties into the crowd.
No, I'd be well up for that.
Oh, why not?
That'd be outstanding.
Those big foam hands, just with loads of fingers. Looking like Zoidberg from Futurama.
You could market that, couldn't you? Just like a six-fingered foam hand. It'd be a big seller.
That could be the badge, you know, like Ulster's badge.
Just with an extra digit, but the digit is perpendicular to the rest of us. I don't know where we are going with that, but
we're
going to
get shut down this week, aren't we?
Who cares? You did mention, though, so we're talking about...
Sam Lana cares.
So fucking hell. I'm not allowed to tell people. I'm not. Yeah. I can't even talk about him.
What I've been a little bit disappointed about is the fact that we're all blocked by a certain Irish person, because I bet that has been absolute gold over the last three months.
Hasn't Russ started up another profile and just to hassle her?
I have not. And I don't hassle anyone.
Look at the fence.
Let's move on before we get sued.
Let's move on then to something a little bit lighter. Is that the club's individual stances on the Black Lives Matter or the, you know, before
moving
every
to a light topic.
So, moving to a light topic. Now here's the thing, right? The football matches did their support of Black Lives Matter. All of the first football, when the football restarted, I thought, you know, if they all took a knee, fine, you know, do what you got to do, show your support, do, you know, not bothered by it. I thought after the third, fourth, fifth time that the same team did the same thing at the start of a match was a bit pointless. You've made your gesture, you've shown your support, you don't have to do it every time. But that was something that was kind of agreed upon across the clubs. It wasn't an official stance, but that's what they decided to do. Now, the PRL, on the other hand, have left it open to interpretation for the clubs to do all of their own different bits and pieces.
I nearly said something there, and then I remembered I've only just gone back to work.
Yeah. So there was a list. A list came out the other day about what each club was going to do. And again, going back to Exeter, Exeter was very nondescript. It just said fully supports rugby against racism. So the PRL are not using the political statement of Black Lives Matter and all that other stuff. They are creating their own support banner or whatever it's called, as rugby against racism. Now, I've seen people like who support BLM on Twitter, supposedly really great people trying to be the best version of themselves and living their best lives and YOLO. And moaning because, well, rugby aren't doing it under the banner of Black Lives Matter. If everybody did it under the same banner, then it would be a more powerful statement. Well, no. Rugby's doing a rugby against racism. BLM is a political movement which was done a lot of stuff, good stuff and stuff over the last 3 or 4 months. It shouldn't be about a universal approach. It should be about a supportive, you know, yes, using their position and highlighting, you know, that racism in sport or in the world isn't acceptable, but telling people under what banner that should appear under or what they should do to show their support is completely incorrect. And these fucking do-good twat bags that feel the need to tell everybody else. They feel the need to tell everybody else how and why they should show their support. And if they don't show their support properly that or in a certain way, then it's not supporting the cause, can get in the fucking sea. Because they are just as bad as the people. They are just as bad as the people that are, you know, that are piping out all the other utter bullshit on social media. So I tell you what, leave people to support the cause or not support the cause in however way they see fit. And don't bring your fucking do-goodership onto anybody else. Doug.
Prime example, Izzy Folau in the rugby league.
He's my favourite player.
Well, look, he didn't.
Well, for punching chat questions,
he didn't kneel. Yeah, like he's got a few twatty views, whatever, but they're his views and he wants to do things his way. And he said that the reason he didn't kneel is because he only kneels for God. Now, take from that what you will. You know, if you're religious, great, fantastic. But why should the fact that he said that demean anything that he believes? The thing I have the problem with is that you've got to show support, but you've got to show support the right way, otherwise it's not support.
Yeah.
I'm sure Israel Folau's only got that view because that's what his priest used to say to him when he was a little child growing up, that you need to kneel for God. But it's
he's gonna get a hell of a contract with Fox News when he finishes, isn't he?
He is. To me, the issue here, the reason it's an issue is because Premiership Rugby's been weak about it. Now, they had an opportunity here
not
to go...
Not the views of Douglas Andrews.
Not the view of Douglas Andrews. The views entirely of Phil Elkins. They had an opportunity here to say, look, here's the time for us to really take a positive stance against racism. Everybody here would... I'm sure would 100% agree that racism is not welcome within rugby or indeed any sector of life. So Premiership Rugby had a great opportunity to go, you know what, there's a real movement here that we can take some positive actions to ensure that racism's not welcome within rugby. And we're going to send some recommendations down to the clubs and hope that they all follow. Whereas what they've done is they've gone, here's an opportunity for us to do something about racism. Clubs, make your own mind up to what you're going to do. And it's setting up clubs and players for a fall. If they turn around and go, you know what, bearing in mind there's no crowds, we're going to have massive banners all around the thing, rugby against racism. We're going to have pictures of multicultural crowds all through it, whatever. And we're going to make a strong stand. We'll have a minute silence for every game or whatever. I don't really care what it is, but they could have used a collective effort to bring to build on the movement that's happening. I mean, I, like you, Russ, I, Black Lives Matter has achieved some good things, but equally it has become politicized too much, and some of the stuff that they're putting about removing the police is just absolutely bonkers. You can't have a state without police. It's just ridiculous. But they could have done something really positive, but instead they've gone, you know what, it's up to you, clubs. And a player like, let's call Izzy Folau Stuart Hogg, for argument's sake. Say everybody decides they're going to take a knee and Stuart Hogg doesn't take a knee because, or who's, what's the Scottish prop who never used to play on a Sunday?
Ewan Murray.
I ought to know. I played against him.
On a Sunday.
It was a Wednesday, actually. It was when we were at uni. So say he decides not to take a knee because of strong religious views. He is then lined up to get absolutely lambasted as an individual, and people are going to turn around and call him a racist because of it. It's just an absolutely farcical lack of management, as far as I can see.
Or what it is allowing, sorry, Ben, is allowing the clubs to make their own decisions and allowing the players within those clubs to show their support in any way that they see fit. Just because people don't want to kneel or don't want to do things in a certain way, as we said earlier, doesn't make them non-supporters, doesn't make them racist. It just means they want to show their support in their own way. So why should everybody have to do it uniformly? I can't find the tweet with the list of what each club said that they were going to do, but things like, oh, one club's going to form a V, what, like V for Vendetta or something. I don't, like, one club's going to do this or one club's going to do that. But Exeter are going to show support for rugby against racism. Now, that's enough to me, the fact that they're going to show support for rugby against racism. They're going to show a mark of support, however that might be. Doesn't matter. They don't have to go into any more depth than that. But people were jumping all over different teams, but mainly Exeter for absolutely no reason.
Exeter are on the shit list for everyone at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, yeah.
Everyone who's not an Exeter fan seems to be piling on Exeter. I don't really understand it.
So,
because they're playing well?
They're Saracens now, aren't they? But, you know,
yeah.
I think Saracens propaganda department has done a good job.
My sort of view on it, I think Doug and Russ, being sort of world-class curmudgeons, are more upset about being told what to do rather than any of the sort of more ingrained issues. And, you know, I think looking back on sort of protests people have done in sports, they've been far more effective when they've been outliers. So I'm thinking of was it the 68 Olympics with the Black Power salutes on the podium. If you ever get the chance to look up the story of that, it's a really interesting story about the two Americans and the Australian and how they were friends for the rest of their lives. But that's sort of an iconic photo, and you've got at the start of this, when there was just the odd NFL player doing it, I thought that was quite a powerful message. But I do think if you just mandate that everyone has to do it, it's almost like a box ticking exercise then. And I think perhaps you're then, as Phil said, you're leaving players out to dry if in that way as well, if for any reason it doesn't happen. I think, you know, in the cricket, there was that interview with Michael Holding, which was really good.
Amazing.
He spoke, you know, incredible amount of sense. And I think that's a better way of educating people that maybe don't understand it than maybe some kind of gesture, you know, before a game, you know, in an empty stadium.
How long do we have to go on doing it?
Yeah.
So,
sorry, I interrupted your flow there, Ben.
No, I mean, I think all I'm saying is I don't think any of us have got a problem with the sort of cause in its widest sense. You know, what happened in America was terrible, and what happened to that guy was that shouldn't happen to anybody, and that's where it's all come from, and I think everyone agreed with that. But now it's become a sort of polarized issue. People on Twitter, I mean,
because they're better people than us.
Yeah, friend. I mean, a lot of these All Lives Matters people were very keen to machine gun the boats in the Channel this week. So, you know, there's a little bit of
strafing them from a Cessna.
Yeah, a little bit of a hypocrisy for you, but you know, those people they're going to go out of fashion before long. You know, hopefully they'll breed themselves out, but you know.
Because Be Kind lasted a long time after Caroline Flack died, didn't it? It's the way, it's the world that we live in. It's such a fast paced move, like everything moves, and potentially in the next 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, it'll be something different that is right at the forefront of everyone's agenda. Racism in sport isn't a new thing. It's not like kick it out in football. Like, it's been around for a long time. Racism as a thing has been around for a long time, and the only way it can stop, or the only way it can be made better, is through education and through development and teaching our children and like educating ourselves. But what we don't need, and I think you might have hit the nail on the head a little bit, Ben, what we don't need is self-righteous shitheads telling us all day, every day, how we should feel and how we should act and how we should show support or not show support, because that pisses more people off than it gets on board. If you let everybody be for and find their own way and find their own path, but offer advice and support and guidance rather than being an absolute muggy asshole, then maybe it might gain a little bit more traction with some of the people that
I think maybe what they should have done is perhaps mandated for at least the first week, maybe the first 2 weeks, and just gone, look, the other sports, they've done it, they've shown support for a good cause.
Yeah,
let's do that. Then after a couple of weeks, they could have gone, okay, it's now up to individual players how they want to market T-shirts. Keep kneeling if you want to. It's your decision.
A bit like the water break. They should have disappeared after 2 weeks too.
However they wanted to do it after that.
It was a joke. It's a joke.
But at this point, they've now come between the two stools, haven't they? They've kind of told them to do something, but not what. And they've left it up in the air, and I think Phil's right. It needed a decision, a central decision. I mean, in the cricket, it was done without any fuss, wasn't it? You know, there wasn't a like pre-prepared list of all the things that were going to happen for Twitter to go mental about.
But they did it at the start of the first. They did it at the start of the first Test match, and that was it. Day one. Before the start of play of the first Test match.
Didn't they do it at the start of every match?
I thought they only did it for the first one. I could be wrong about that, but...
Well, there's a BLM emblem on the... comes up on the scorecards whenever they come up on Sky Sports at the moment. So it's still
ongoing. But that is... I say, is that not enough? I mean, when is anything ever going to be enough for some of these people? I think, like we said earlier, just not showing visible support all the time is as bad to these people, as supporting the other side. It doesn't make any sense.
Take two completely separate incidents. There's a farmer put something that was pretty hideously racist on Twitter today, and it's since been deleted and got fairly lambasted by the majority of the farming community for it. About the fact that it was basically implying that no non-white person had ever really achieved anything of significance and noteworthy at all. And got fairly severely lambasted for it, as he should have done. And you look at that and you go, well, actually, society's kind of kicked back against him there, and rightly so. And then you've got Dawn Butler kicking up a stink and putting videos about how stop and search is wrong when she got stopped in her car by the police and searched. She wasn't even driving it. It was being driven by a white person. So she's taken a completely innocent situation and tried to turn it into something race related. And that's what's pissing people off. And that's what's turning people away from positive movements to try and get rid of racism, is people just being virtue signaling arseholes. So when people stop being dicks, actually, I think we'll start to make some decent progress on both sides.
Right. Let's shift away from semi-seriousness, because I've had enough, basically. So they can't cancel us. They can't censor us. we might lose a few followers, but who cares? Adam Foxcroft, host of Punching Chat on Twitter, asks, which would make a better rugby player, someone with three arms or someone with three legs?
Depends where the arm is. If the arm and the leg are in the same place, somebody with three arms.
It's got to be the arms, isn't it?
I'm assuming the third leg is coming between the first two. That's going to make running an absolute nightmare, whereas the third arm there would help you catch shit passes from shit scrum arse. Put around
pretty
your ankles.
Sidestep, though, wouldn't it? An extra leg.
Yeah, you could carry the ball and in two hands and hand off.
Some might say I've already got an extra leg.
You could carry the ball in two hands and have a wank.
You could carry the ball in one hand and have a double-handed wank.
Wow. Okay.
I was going to say two handoff, but then I thought no.
Well, you'd basically be having a two hand off, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would. We've got to put some kind of warning on the cover of this one.
The tone suddenly changed, didn't it?
Doesn't Rugby Saracens listen to this with his son?
Sorry, James.
Tom Parker's asked a question, but I'll ask that one in a minute because it takes us back into a semi-serious route. Let's ask this one. What's the best flavour crisp? Doug.
Ooh, now, are we talking potato or maize-based?
Now you're talking.
Carbohydrate-based snack that comes in a packet between 35 grams.
Any. It's a flavour. It's a flavour. It's not a type of crisp.
Pickled onion Monster Munch is a belter, but...
So is pickled onion the best flavour?
No. I'm a crisp connoisseur, you see. I consider myself in the top three crisp eaters in this country.
Behind me, so I'm at number two.
I'm a big fan of a Tesco bacon fry.
You can wherever you fucking like.
Go on, Doug. What were you saying?
Sorry, I'm a big fan of a Tesco bacon fry.
Ooh. Yeah.
But if you're just going classic, just straight up and down crisp, the Walker's chicken flavour is right up there. And the Walker's beef and onion until they discontinued it.
Not too sure about that. I do like a traditional onion ring brand onion ring. No, like a co-op onion ring. The co-op also do a sea salt and malt vinegar or cider vinegar crisp in their sort of co-op luxury collection, if that is not a oxymoron. And also, you mentioned the pickled onion Monster Munch. I'm gonna raise you for a roast beef Monster Munch, which are...
I'm out on that. Sorry.
Ben, what are you saying?
Well, I'm saying I think this was just supposed to be a fun question. Spent quite a long time on it. Salt and vinegar, ridge cut.
Ben drops the ready salted.
Salt and shake.
Salt and vinegar, ridge cut.
Ooh.
What, McCoy's?
McCoy's or I don't know if they still do them, but Kettle Chips used to do ridge cut salt and vinegar ones, and they were amazing.
Brannigan's, beef Brannigan's as well, if you remember those, they were decent.
Yeah, they're pro.
Look, you've said a lot of things today, but slagging off Kettle Chips.
Kettle chips are rubbish, mate. They're like, let me tell you what kettle chips are. They're the Earl Grey of crisps. They perfected tea with tea. Yeah? They perfected crisps with crisps. No one needed kettle chips. Marks and Spencer, Middle England nonsense.
Can't buy kettle chips from Marks and Spencer's.
Don't get me started on beetroot crisps either. Or
I love them.
Yeah, of course you do.
I love a vegetable crisp.
You're one of those Twitter do-gooders, aren't you?
So I'm assuming all of you at some point have been and had a tasting menu somewhere, one of these seven-course jobbies.
Now, when you go to the Indian.
Yeah. It's just seven what do you mean you may have done this somewhere every time I go out to eat?
So when you go for a tasting menu, they don't offer you a wine flight that is a bottle of wine that's the same glass for every meal. You need to pair the crisp with the situation.
This is a very good point.
Crisps for different situations. If I'm coming home at 2 o'clock in the morning having had a few beers, it's a packet of Quavers every time. In fact, it's probably four packets of Quavers every time.
In a bowl,
yeah. With my face just in the bowl. But I think for kind of a standout, sit around a fire pit of an evening with a couple of mates, let's go and get a bag of crisps. You're going to struggle to beat a big bag of Walker Sensations Thai Sweet Chili.
Ooh. Good shout.
Bit decadent. Like bit decadent for me. A question from at Frank Aldinio, one of our long-time listeners. Whatever happened to the Quins and New Zealand link? The Quins and Blues New Zealand link-up? Marchand went to the Blues, but I was expecting to see at least some New Zealand players moving over. Well, I guess old COVID. COVID.
As if anyone from New Zealand wants to move to England at the moment.
Yeah, and I would imagine the Blues looked down the list of the Quins players, saw Joe Gray, and were like, yeah, we'll probably just... give them a swerve, lads.
We'll stay here and we'll be 0-8 in our super. The Blues 0-8.
The Blues won it, didn't they?
Blues won it. Who's Gatland's team? Bruce, the Chiefs. Yeah, Owen Farrell, Owen Franks, 0-8. Well done. Stole someone else's joke. Didn't even get a laugh.
Oh, that was a joke.
Yeah, sorry about that. I will let's finish up before we go to any other business. So the question from Tom Parker, which is thoughts on the whole development department of the RFU being made redundant. Where does that leave rugby in 5 to 10 years time in England, Phil?
So there's currently a number of development retained staff in each county. So there's three in Cornwall, and as Tom says they've all been made redundant and they're being replaced with 44 people nationwide. So effectively, there's going to be two covering the Southwest. Now, you might not see that much of these guys in the senior rugby setup, but they work their asses off and get around the minis and the juniors setup all the time. And they're there to kind of help engage. But basically, they're there to make sure that people who are volunteers like me, who don't really know what we're doing, are not screwing kids up and are making sure that they're engaged with rugby.
I'm glad you finished that sentence.
Yeah. They're engaged with rugby and they want to keep on playing rugby because we're not doing the old school, I'm going to shout and scream at you until you're all bawling your eyes out, or we're going to go shirts against skins in the middle of December in a snowstorm and make sure that actually what we're doing is exactly the right things. And they work bloody hard. I'm sure you guys know, well, not you, Doug, but Ben and Russ, you'll know Phil Morris. He's one of the people who's been made redundant. Neil Smith as well. And I can't remember the other chap's name, but we're going to be in a situation where I think junior foundation level club rugby is gradually going to be set back about 15, 20 years because some of the stuff that we see coming out of other clubs from the coaches out of other clubs is just not on and it's just not acceptable. I mean, Newquay Hornets lost a year because, and I'll tell you guys later who the coach was at the time, but the coach just, all the parents left because of the way the coach was treating the kids. Now, if coaches are allowed to do that without any degree of input, repercussions, etc. That won't be one year that gets lost from one club. That'll be happening wide scale and kids will turn to other sports. So I think it's a desperately stupid thing to do from an organisation that pays the people at the top massive bucks.
Ben?
I'm just kind of crossed a wider point there. Is a concern I've got is that I think, at least at the lower level, there's going to be quite a lot of law changes that they bring in to make rugby COVID safe. And I think they'll all be aimed at there being less scrums, less contact, more open spaces. And I don't think they'll ever go back on them. I think they'll bring them in and they'll just become, I don't want to say the phrase new normal, but they'll be the new laws of rugby. And I think it'll be fairly unrecognisable to what we were used to be playing in the mud. And it concerns me that it will become like a sort of stretched game of sevens rather than what we could call proper rugby.
Yeah. Doug, do you have any views on this?
Just repeat the question, mate. I sort of lost the question.
Where was he live?
Yeah, that too. The question was thoughts on the whole development department of the RFU being made redundant. Where does this leave rugby in 5 to 10 years' time in England?
Less developed.
Well, I think, yeah. Well, you've answered that question, haven't you, dickhead?
To me, it's you're going to get a generation of players who are coached by people who aren't singing from the same hymn sheet as the RFU. So you're going to get a lot of teams around the country are going to start, you know, developing and looking at players in a certain way. And I'd imagine that a lot of those teams that have youth setups are going to be looking at players that will get them to win at a certain level of rugby. They won't be looking to develop certain things that may take them to the next level. So I think you'll probably suffer the same sort of decline that Wales faced before they reorganised again.
Yeah.
And then you've
got to start that engagement all over again.
Yeah, but, you know, good on the England players for getting 22 grand a game, though, eh? Because, you know, one Six Nations match would pay for 25 community coaches for the year.
Yeah.
The guys
at the top on their six-figure salaries.
Yeah, and the nice place for all of bloody Howards to go and eat there.
Yeah. Isn't Eddie Jones paid three times what the Prime Minister is?
It's just ludicrous. There's
an issue there about how much we pay the Prime Minister. But...
Yeah. Well,
I can't speak too freely. You guys all know my views probably better than I'll let on here. So,
yeah.
I think it's a terrible misstep to save a few quid at the wrong end of the game.
Yeah, agree. That I think that's probably the best way to put it, is the top-heavy hierarchy. You've been better off thinning out the top end than you will be sifting through the bottom end.
Are you telling me Mauro Itoje wouldn't play for England if they only gave him 500 quid?
Yeah, exactly. They might have to restructure the whole France thing, though, wouldn't they? Anyway, on that kind of note, like all of these games being played behind closed doors, like local league games, have you seen that? So no, like some clubs in rugby and in football that charge a couple of quid to go in and watch the game, that can no longer do that because of COVID restrictions. Yeah, people can now go to the gym and go in spinning classes, but you can't stand socially distant around a field watching other people play sport. Is absolutely utterly mental.
Yeah, and they'll charge a couple of quid and they'll make 10 grand on the bar as well.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I get it, but clubs can.
There's ways around that, mate. Though you just. They're all licensed premises. You just say that the clubhouse is a bar. We're not charging people to come into the rugby. And then, you know, I know at Dunstable, they could do that and they could just set tables out all over the twos pitch.
Yeah.
You know,
there are ways around it.
Stick some tables up in the stands at Launceston.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, let's crack on to some any other business. Ben, have you got any other business for us this week?
Well, not much has happened since the last podcast, has it? We already mentioned it. It's chaos around Cornwall at the moment, and as someone said, people have been commenting that they came on holiday to get away from coronavirus, and it's almost as if you can't catch it down here. And I think we've got to be very careful down here because there is only one hospital. I think people just, when they come down, do need to behave. You know, the villages down by the beaches are pretty much gridlocked, so ambulances and the RNLI can't get in and out. So I just think if people are going to come on holiday, which is great, come and spend your money, but try and act like civilized adults rather than entitled children. That'd be great.
Doug?
Yeah, I just want to reply to Ben on that. You know, a lot of people who during lockdown have been stuck in inner city situations, in flats, in XYZ, haven't had the luxury of just being able to go for a walk in a beautiful place like where you live. So maybe cut them a bit of slack because it's not always been easy.
I totally agree, Doug. And there was a guy on the radio who, you know, they asked him a slightly unfair question, which was, you know, do you want to come down? And he actually said, no, not really, but I've paid £2,000 to bring my family on holiday. And because the government have said it's safe to go, you can't get a refund. And I totally agree with that. But the fact that you've not been able to, you know, get out as much as we have doesn't mean that the rules of wearing a face mask and
absolutely not, but just apply to you. I understand your point, but try and look at it as like we've got myself and Lizzie have got a mutual, a friend who lives in a block of flats. And her only option is to walk around the block. And if she wants, you know, just let these people have a day in the bloody countryside, mate. You know what I mean? They, you know, I appreciate
for you guys. Anybody's saying not
it may
to,
seem just... a bit weird, but you know, people have been stuck in a flat for four months.
As I say, Doug, great. Everyone, you know, come down, but just
try and respect.
Yeah, try and remember that you know absolutely. The virus is here as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. I just think it needs to be balanced, that's all. So you want me to do some any other business, don't you, Russ?
I do, mate, please.
Golf. I hate it. Absolutely.
Well,
hate
welcome. Welcome to my world.
Yeah. I got a golf membership sort of a month into lockdown. My new girlfriend sort of said, look, we need to do something, get you out, get you walking. There's a golf course just down the road. So went down, joined up, developed trigger finger after the first 2 weeks. So every morning I wake up, I have to click my finger straight, which is brilliant. And now all I do is pay money to pump balls into a wood. That's basically what I'm doing. Any money I earn immediately goes on golf balls, which, I mean, I might as well just start a bonfire and throw 20 quid into it every 2 weeks.
It's expensive, isn't it?
I just don't understand why I do it. I come away frustrated. All I worry about is why I can't score lower. I'm obsessed with really, really bland clothing. And yeah, I just sometimes wish that I'd never got into it, but I do love it.
The most infuriating sport game in the world.
And it's helped me reconnect with an old bud. So, has its positives and it has its negatives. Also, if you haven't watched Once Upon a Time in Iraq, go and do it. because it's incredible.
Cool. I've started watching Prodigal Son on Sky. That was pretty decent, the first two episodes of that, so check that out if you have not seen it. I have, not personally, because I'm a bit of a retard, having a new garden building erected, you may have seen on social media. But in the effort to make it warm for the winter, where I can work and sort of spend time out there, during this relentlessly hot weather that we've been having, it is a place that is hotter than the surface of the sun, to the point where I was putting some laminate floor down yesterday and probably sweated approximately a quarter of my body weight out just by laying floor in a sweat box. And Matt,
people would be splashing around in the carpet, wouldn't they?
and they say nurses have it tough.
I know. Well, what I will say is manual labour is not for me. Not for me. So yeah, that's it. We're back. We might even have some rugby to talk about next week. Doug, you're working this week. Where are you?
I'll be at Worcester. 12:30 kickoff. Every game live on BT Sport.
Every game, and it's live. Even the ones that are on Channel 5, are they dual fed as well?
All of them are being shown live. I don't know where, but every game will be live. So
that's good.
What's the lensman at work? I'll be at Worcester.
Oh, nice. Well, make sure you're
12:30 kickoff. By the way, 12:30 kickoff. So you should be able to watch rugby from all day basically on Saturday.
Lovely. Fantastic. And we'll be back next week at some point to talk about what happened and see if there was any shocks and surprises. So, see you later on. Go well.